And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, who is very early. Patty, I did not get your "I'm running a little bit late" phone call. It was very disconcerting.
Well, I was driving. I didn't want to reach for my phone. And
no, you were here. That was very disconcerting. Anyway, our guest is Damon L. Jacobs. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist. I met him in Baltimore last week, and he gave a presentation on PrEP. But he's also the author of two books. One is called Rational Relating, and he should not write a book that has the word rational in the title. And the other one is Absolutely Shouldless, and it's about living a stress-free life. That's easy for me to say. Damon, are you there?
I'm here.
How are you?
I'm so great. Thank you so much for having me on the show
today. Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad you're here. We want to point out, Laurent is not here, Patty, right?
Right.
Right. Okay, so who's the only person in our entire group here who hasn't been near a church or synagogue in 50 years? Laurent.
Laurent.
And he's off for Easter. I just want to point that out to everybody. So anybody who sees him during the week,
but he has a little girl.
Yeah, they're doing an Easter egg hunt. Anyway, part of Damon's introduction in Baltimore as he was doing this PrEP presentation, and it was a wonderful presentation on PrEP. If you don't know what PrEP is, most people don't, because the two sides, and there shouldn't be sides on this, but the two sides on the issue turned off the media when it first came out so badly nobody wanted to write about it. So when I heard Damon speak, he was the first person who made sense. I bet nobody has said that to you before, Damon.
actually, no. That description has not usually been applied to me. So I'm honored to hear that, David.
Yeah. Okay. So the other part of his introduction was, and I'll tell you why I need PrEP, because I'm a big old bottom. Okay. Now, and in 33 years that this show has been on, we've never introduced a guest that way.
You didn't introduce Alan Seuss that way when he was on your show?
No, we didn't. And you know why? Because that was like early 90s, and we were much more restricted in what we could say at the time on the air. Anyway, Damon, you are a marriage and family therapist. How did you get interested in becoming the speaker for PrEP, and what were you doing on my campus earlier this year? And was that LC7 that you were in?
Okay, those are a lot of questions.
I know.
It's David.
Okay. It's me.
He can't be rational either.
That's why I told you, Patty, this is going to be an idiotic interview about some very serious topics.
Well, it's fun, and it's actually really appropriate that we're talking about this on Easter of all day, given that for a lot of people, Easter represents a spiritual rebirth and renewal, and PrEP has really offered that for so many of us that are affected, and even those that have acquired HIV, that PrEP has really symbolized a renewal. But let's talk about what that is.
What is it? Yeah.
PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. It is a daily medicine that an HIV-negative individual could take in order to remain HIV-negative in case they are exposed to HIV at some point in their life, whether through sexual contact or IV drug use. And as a licensed marriage family therapist who began learning about healing and helping back in the early 1990s in the San Francisco Bay Area, which I'm sure a lot of you and your listeners know and remember, that was really just such a devastating time. That was such a difficult time to be in the community, to live in the gay community, love the gay community, because it really meant living and loving with people who were dying of AIDS.
And I want to give an example. Patty, do you know how many people you lost to AIDS?
Oh, lots of friends.
Okay.
Not nearly as many
And you know, I can tell you this. In 1990, I was going through my Rolodex. Yes, I had a Rolodex.
Everybody
not
had
a computer.
A Rolodex,
we then. All had Rolodexes then. And I was pulling out cards of people who had died, and I was pulling them out. 1, 2, 3. When I got to 50, I said, ooh, this isn't healthy. I'm going to stop counting. And that was in 1990.
Yeah. Wow. It was such a rough time.
Yeah.
And while all that was going on, my formal education for psychology was teaching us how to just treat an individual or treat a couple or a family. But the people I was seeing and the people I was knowing were suffering from much larger structural issues related to the trauma and the grief and the chronic suffering related to AIDS and death and the failure of our political administration to do a damn thing about it. And so that really called upon me, as someone who wanted to be a healer, to get more active and to be more of an educator in terms of HIV prevention and helping people try to learn ways to have pleasurable sex with minimal risk. And so flash forward about 20 years later, when I was beginning to hear about PrEP, beginning to learn about the research and the science, which verified that a daily pill could prevent HIV by about 99% risk transmission if used daily in these trials. I was like, whoa. First of all, how come I'm not taking this? Second of all, how come everyone who is concerned about HIV is not taking this?
Cost.
Well, before the FDA approved it in 2012, cost may have been an issue.
Okay.
But on July 16th, 2012, the Food and Drug Administration approved Truvada, which is the name of the drug. They approved it as the very first HIV prevention strategy. And yes, I'm being very conscientious of how I'm saying this, because condoms have never been approved by the FDA as an HIV prevention strategy. But PrEP has. And once PrEP did become approved by the FDA, then all insurances in the United States covered Truvada as PrEP. The only exceptions to that were the religious insurance companies like Hobby Lobby. They didn't cover it anyway. But all major insurance companies, all companies on the Affordable Care Act do cover Truvada as PrEP.
That's interesting. You know, when we were talking last week, one of the other people on your panel, I asked him, I said, I'm real bad at taking pills, and I am. I can do my best, have to take pills for 7 days, and on day eight, I still have two pills left because somehow I missed one. So I said, how effective is it if you miss a day or two?
Well, here's the great thing about Truvada, and this is one of the reasons why this was the first drug to be studied and approved, is because Truvada is known as a, quote, very forgiving drug, that the levels of tenofovir, which is one of the medications in Truvada, once it is built up in your system, once you've taken it consistently, it stays in your system over a period of time. And so even if you miss a dose here or there, even if you forget a dose here or there, it still is highly effective in preventing HIV. Now, the current guidelines around use of PrEP is that the CDC recommends people take it daily. But we also see in all these research trials that no one in any research trial or clinical demonstration project has ever become HIV positive when they have used Truvada four or more times a week. And there's about 10 different studies now that have looked at this around the world, and all have seen the same thing. Four or more times a week provides a tremendous, significant amount of protection. At least, if you're taking it four times a week, it's at least 92% or higher.
That's
now,
amazing.
Right before I was talking to you, right now, just on Facebook, I was having a conversation with a couple friends who got the flu vaccine this year and got the flu anyway. And how effective is the flu vaccine every year? It really varies, but, you know, we think about the flu vaccine as something that we recommend everybody get if they're at risk of the flu, which is kind of everybody, and that's only about 70% effective. You put that in contrast with Truvada's PrEP, which is over 92% effective, and you see that this is pretty unusual in the medical world for us to have such a highly protective medication available.
One of the things that did make the news a few weeks ago was that somebody who was on PrEP, who said that he had taken at least the amount needed, did contract the disease, but he had a different strain of the virus. Isn't that right?
So what happened was, in this one incident, and this is, we don't know exactly how many people in the world are using Truvada as PrEP, but conservatively there's about 60,000 of us right now. And unfortunately, what happened was there is one individual in Canada who acquired HIV from another individual who had a very, very, very unusual strain of HIV. It was unusual because this individual had a strain of HIV that was resistant to five different HIV medications, and he had a detectable viral load. And all of that suggests that this individual had been on HIV meds and had stopped taking them, and his virus had overcome and built resistance to these medications. So unfortunately, this individual who is HIV positive, carrying around this extremely rare HIV virus, had sexual contact with an individual who appeared to be adherent to PrEP, and he did, and PrEP did not protect the negative individual in this case. The individual did become HIV positive with the same strain of HIV, And we learned a lot from that. Now, one of the main things we've always said in medicine, that I've always learned anyway, is that you never, never, no doctor, no serious researcher will ever say that any medicine is 100% in anything. When there's a high confidence and when there's the research to back it up, we'll say 99%. So I've been saying 99% about PrEP since the beginning, and that still holds true.
But we really only know of one case out of about 60,000 people.
60,000 currently taking it. Mm-hmm. And when we look back at the last 10 years of all the research trials and all the clinical demonstration projects, there have been at least 70,000 people who have taken it at some time or another in the last 10 years. And again, this is the only case where this has ever been seen to occur. You know, meanwhile, we look at, I'm not dismissing that as being, I'm not saying don't be worried about it, don't be aware of it.
Sure.
It's important for us to be aware of that. But I also want to put that in context of how we all mitigate risk every day. Every day we get out of bed or we get in our car or we cross the street or we get on an airplane, we are taking some kind of risk.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us in our mind don't think about it that much because we're like, okay, what I want to get or the pleasure or the satisfaction I want to get from this activity is worth the risk.
Sure. Doc, you had a question. Doc does our video.
Yeah, I do video. Now, let me play the ignorant person so you can straighten me out here.
I always
thought the flu vaccine is something like the smallpox vaccine where you actually get the disease. No, you are not really protected. You get the disease a smaller amount. Your body builds up the immunity to build up against the bigger disease. So isn't it most likely when you get that flu vaccine, you are going to get the flu?
No. It's not most likely. The reason for a live vaccine, and the flu vaccine isn't live anymore, but it's a killed version of the virus, and it protects you because it stimulates your immune system. Truvada is doing something completely different. Can you even explain, Damon, what Truvada does? It's not the virus at all.
Right. It's not a vaccine. It is not a vaccine, so it's not introducing the disease into your body, any form or any dead form of the disease into your body. What Truvada does, and I'm not the best person to explain what it does on a medical level, but what it basically does when I take Truvada every day is it kind of puts a coating around my T cells so that if HIV gets into my body, it has no opportunity to duplicate or replicate. So I do not become HIV positive,
right,
even if exposed.
And that's my understanding of it also. And the second drug, I'm not sure which it does. Does it kill the virus inside the T cell, or is this the one that prevents it from leaving the T cell so that you might have one infected T cell? That cell will live its life and die, but it's preventing the HIV from getting out of it.
Right. I mean, it's one drug.
It's one of those.
It's one drug with two medications,
mm-hmm,
tenofovir and emtricitabine, which are both used for HIV treatment.
Right.
So when these two drugs are used in combination in a drug called, I'm sorry, when these two medications are put together in a drug called Truvada, that is what has been seen in time after time, research trial after research trial, to be so effective at preventing HIV. How exactly it does it, I'm not the best person to say, but if people want to learn this and they want to get more facts about this, I highly encourage them to visit my Facebook group, which is called Prep Facts, F-A-C-T-S, Rethinking HIV Prevention and Sex. This is an international group I started on Facebook 2.5 years ago. We now have over 13,500 international members, many of whom are on PrEP, many of whom just want to learn about PrEP and ask these questions. But visit it, and there are members on my group who are much better at explaining the science of it than I am.
But my understanding of it as a layman is exactly the same as yours, coating the T cells so that the HIV can't get in there.
Right,
is the best.
Right.
I'm really thrilled to hear that you were speaking to the gay and lesbian journalists in the country, because the stuff I've read about PrEP is all over the map. And so I think journalists in particular need to be up on how to talk about it. And so thank you for being there to set them straight. So
but Patty, this is why I was excited about it. When PrEP first came out, I talked to Gilead. Those people were nuts. I talked to AHF, which was against PrEP because they thought it was going to keep this drug away from people who needed it, who had HIV. They thought it was a dangerous drug. They thought it was just all kinds of things. And they were screaming at me. And if they were screaming at me, when I have an understanding of HIV, I can just imagine how they talk to other reporters. And Damon David, was the first person who talked about it sanely.
You know, I'm really glad you said that, and I'm also saddened, though. I'm saddened when I hear you say that, because I know it's true, and it just reminds me that HIV, in my mind, this is an issue of science. This is an issue of medicine. It's not about emotions. It's not, well, it's not. It has emotional implications, mm-hmm. and it has political implications. But first and foremost, this is a medical issue. This is science. And when I hear medicine and science getting mixed up in a lot of turbulent emotional and political issues to the point where voices are being silenced and information is being censored, then I'm saddened by that. Mm-hmm. And that's actually one of the reasons why I did start a social media group about this, because I really wanted people to have an opportunity to just get to learn the science and the facts and the data and then be able to discuss the questions and even engage in respectful debates about what the implications of this drug are.
Mm-hmm. And I can promise you they're not getting that from anywhere, from either side, not from the company that makes it, not from the company who sells it but hates it but makes a lot of money off of it. They're not getting it from those places. And those have been the two loud voices in this that have prevented it from getting any kind of discussion. We're talking to Damon L. Jacobs. He's a licensed family and marriage and family therapist, author of two books, and PrEP cheerleader, I guess. What's your title there?
PrEP educator.
PrEP educator.
Champion.
PrEP champion.
Yeah. Well, it may be, but I don't really – I like to remind people I'm not advocating PrEP. I'm not telling people what to do with their bodies. I am pro-education.
Right.
I just want people to be educated and learn what the facts are and see what the science says and then decide for themselves whether this is an appropriate method or not.
And Damon, we need to take a quick break. We're going to talk more about PrEP and stress and safety and all kinds of other stuff like that with you right after this.
This is William. I download Lambda Weekly podcast from LambdaWeekly.com.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Laurent has the day off. Doc's here. Josh is here with his alter ego, Chris. And our guest today is Damon L. Jacobs. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist. We'll get to the marriage and family part of it maybe toward the end of the show. We're talking about PrEP because he's a PrEP educator.
Exactly.
First of all, you were in Albany, my alma mater, this week.
Yeah.
What the hell were you doing there?
Well, just hanging out on street corners, you know, spreading the good word. No, I got invited through Albany Medical Center. I've done a few trainings with them for staff and for community. And a few times a year have been able to go up there and speak with their staff and then did an event on the college campus the other night where I got to speak to a group of people, mostly between the ages of 18 and 22, about PrEP and the history of PrEP and share a little bit more about the history of activism and ACT UP because they didn't really know anything about that. And
That hurts me that they don't know about ACT UP. Oh, gosh.
I know. I realize I've been doing this longer than most of you have been alive, but that's cool. Let's have a conversation. So it was really fun, and they were just so smart and attentive and asked some amazing questions.
Wait a minute. And you're being surprised. I'm telling you, this is my alma mater. Of course they were smart. Of course they were intelligent. Of course they asked great questions.
They were wonderful.
Patty is just rolling her eyes and just going, oh, God.
It goes on and on about Albany.
What were some of the questions? What were some of the main things that they wanted to know?
Well, okay, so they had questions, of course, about cost, which you asked. They had questions about efficacy, about how effective this works. And they had questions, of course, about STIs, which we can talk about if you'd like.
Sure.
But one of the questions that comes up all the time when I do trainings, whether it's with community members or doctors or nurses, is about, what about STIs? What are we going to do with these STIs?
And tell everybody what an STI is.
So an STI is a sexually transmitted infection, also commonly known as sexually transmitted disease or STD, such as syphilis, such as gonorrhea, such as chlamydia, which are the big three, which are the ones that the Center for Disease Control reported are significantly on the rise based on 2014 numbers. And this is especially in men who have sex with other men, so men who identify as gay or bisexual or even heterosexual and having sex with other men, that within this group there is a significant increase in all three of these primary STIs. And that is a point of great concern for the CDC and for our community. Now, where I disagree with some of the media, and, you know, you criticize the media, I'm really critical of how the media has responded to this, because, once again, Truvada is scapegoated for this problem, which has actually now been with us since 2007, that according to the CDC, we have seen a rise in these STIs every year since 2007, and that, you know, how many people were on PrEP in 2007? Not many, only the people who were in research trials at that point.
Right.
And so to blame Truvada for something that's been going on for most of the past decade doesn't seem to be rational nor effective in terms of helping people understand what STIs are and how to help prevent them or reduce the risk around them.
So how do you prevent syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia?
Well, in terms of this is every single person needs to mitigate their own risk. We talked about risk mitigation. If you are concerned about STIs, if you are concerned about acquiring an STI, you have a lot of options. One is not to have sex at all.
Yeah, that won't work.
Well, okay. Well, one is also to use condoms consistently. But if we look at the history, that doesn't work so well either.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know people who decide, okay, with some people I use condoms, with some people I don't use condoms. I think the really big issue here is for any of us that are sexually active with or without condoms is that we get regularly tested and, if needed, treated for STIs and that we inform our partners about that. And right now, it feels like in the community there is so much shame and embarrassment and stigma about telling a partner, hey, sorry, I tested positive for gonorrhea, mm-hmm. or sorry, I may have exposed you to syphilis. Please go get tested. And in New York City, we've had some trouble even having access to testing. Our main health clinic in Chelsea was closed down and has been closed down now for a year. But I still recommend that people go to their local clinics, or I'm sure in Dallas you have some great agencies that will do effective testing.
Yeah, Dallas, I think, has the highest syphilis rate in the country.
Wow.
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So if definitely people got state. Tested and treated more frequently and told their partners when they need to be notified, I think we would see a reduction in that. And that's really where I think we need to go. I think the gay community has done a lot to talk about HIV and make that more just kind of a normal part of our conversation. But we're not having those conversations as much about STIs. And again, you look at the stats that the CDC shares with us. They say there's about 350,000 new gonorrhea cases in 2014. But how many people were actually using Truvada for PrEP in 2014? Any guesses?
Well, 60,000 now, so it had to be probably half that?
It was exactly. It was about half that because it doubled in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
The CDC we estimate there were about 17,000 people in America using Truvada for PrEP mm-hmm. in 2014. So to say that 17,000 people account for 350,000 new gonorrhea cases, I don't know. Do the math.
It's a good thing Laurent
isn't
here.
We get accused of being kind of slutty, but I don't think we're that good at it.
Oh, I am. Laurent is Josh. Oh, please.
Well, I guess you're busier than I am because I have to do, you know, I got a job and a business to run. So I'm sexually active, but I'm not that active.
I'm a writer most of the time. We do this radio show. We get it done. This hour show, we get it done 45 minutes flat. My writing, I just whip those things out and then I go out spreading gonorrhea. Okay, so.
Well, if you're whipping it out, get tested, get treated.
So,
yes, please,
so Truvada never said it would prevent sexually transmitted diseases.
Absolutely
and
not.
And it doesn't.
No, it does not. It prevents. So Truvada's PrEP prevents HIV only, and that's it. It does that very, very well. It does not prevent any other of these STIs from being transmitted. However, here's the cool thing about PrEP. Most doctors, and I know most doctors in Dallas, are following a protocol of prescribing PrEP where they want to see their patients 3 to 4 times a year. And during those 3 to 4 times a year, they're going to double check, make sure you're HIV negative. They're going to take your blood to make sure that there's no side effects. And they're also going to test and screen you for all these other STIs. And so people using PrEP, for the most part in the U.S., are getting more consistent testing and treating than the general population. So although PrEP does not stop the transmission of these other STIs, the protocol stops the spread of these other STIs.
Okay, because of the number of times you have to go to the doctor,
mm-hmm.
especially during the first year, I would think after a couple of years, if you have no reactions, you don't have to go four times a year, or do you?
Well, that's a really great question, and the CDC is still sorting this out.
Okay.
The CDC really recommends twice a year for drawing blood, making sure there's no kidney changes. Some doctors are being a little more conservative, mm-hmm. and as you said, for the first year, they're wanting to do more. They just want to make sure those first year or two that there's no changes, that your kidneys are doing fine. I believe I've been now on it for almost 5 years, and my doctor's now drawing blood, I think, twice a year instead okay. of four times a year.
And what you said about kidneys, I think that's another factor that a number of people think about. If you have HIV and you don't take medications, chances are you're going to die.
Yeah.
I mean, the survival rate is maybe 5%. We have a number of people from the 1980s who contracted HIV and they're long-term survivors. They have things in their system that doesn't allow the HIV to replicate quickly, is what we've learned. How safe are these drugs, though, for your kidneys, your liver, any other organs?
So on the spectrum of safety of medications, mm-hmm. Truvada is considered one of the safest. Now, I'm not saying 100%. Mm-hmm. Nothing is 100%. But recent studies have said it's about as safe as taking a leave in terms of kidney changes. Now, there have been some cases seen with tenofovir, which is one of the medications, in Truvada, and so it's about 1 in 200 people using PrEP have had some kidney changes while they have used Truvada as PrEP. And it is for that reason that doctors are going to take the blood at least several times a year for the first few years just to see how your kidneys are reacting and continue to take it periodically thereafter. In every single one of these cases, however, if there were some kidney changes, if the doctor drew the blood and said, your kidneys aren't processing as well, the individual has stopped using Truvada as PrEP, and their kidney functioning went back to normal functioning within 6 months.
Oh, okay.
So again, there is not one case seen where there has been irreparable kidney damage, just kidney changes that went back to normal functioning when the person was tested and when they stopped using Truvada.
And that's significant. It's 0.5% if you base it on 60,000 people, because 1 in 200 out of 60,000 is about 3,000 people.
Yeah.
That's a significant number of people that says, yeah, you better go to your doctor if you're going to do this. You need to take it real seriously.
And the other thing to keep in mind in terms of harm reduction, because this is not harm elimination, this is harm reduction. Mm-hmm. I take PrEP because I'm at risk for HIV. I could be at risk for HIV. That is who it's indicated for, individuals who could be at risk for HIV for any number of reasons. If you become HIV positive, you are most likely going to be prescribed Truvada in combination with other medications that you're going to have to take foreseeably for the rest of your life on a daily basis. Now, PrEP is something that an individual can take during periods of life where they might be at risk of acquiring HIV, but they don't have to take it during the parts of their life when they're not at risk of acquiring HIV. It's analogous to a woman who uses birth control pills during certain phases of her life, but may not need it in other phases of her life.
Mm-hmm.
That is an advantage of PrEP over treatment. And I hope that makes sense. Because it gets a little murky because we're talking about Truvada and we're talking about the same drug that an HIV-positive person would take if they needed Truvada for treatment.
Mm-hmm.
That is the same exact pill that I take as a negative person to prevent HIV. The difference being, mm-hmm. if I'm positive, I would be using that same pill in combination with other medications for the rest of my life on a daily basis.
And one thing that I think confused some people, especially when it first came out, okay, if Truvada is the drug that that's treating people with HIV and it didn't work to prevent the HIV, why would you continue taking it after you have HIV? Chances are you wouldn't. Chances are they'll look for a different drug because there are a number of drugs to use.
There are a number of drugs.
Yeah.
But I think it's also – now, as it's important for listeners to remember, because we were talking earlier about resistant strains and the one individual who became HIV positive and acquired a resistant strain – when I hear the word resistant as a consumer, as a patient, I think of something that means that I could get something that a drug won't treat, that I could get a strain of HIV that a drug won't medicate. That's actually not scientifically the way it goes. This individual who acquired HIV, who had resistance to these five different medications, still used Truvada for the first 30 days in order to suppress his viral load. He did get, as an HIV individual, as a positive individual, he still was using Truvada for the first 30 days of his treatment to suppress his viral load successfully. It's just that he needed more of drugs to treat his to treat the viral load than what is usually prescribed. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. So originally, Truvada was recommended that you take one pill a day for as long as you want to be treated for HIV prevention.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're finding, and we had mentioned this the first half hour, what they're finding is once you get Truvada up to the right level in your body, you don't have to take it every day necessarily. So how long does it take before it's preventing anything?
Well, okay, for in order for it to build up in your system, the maximal amount is recommended by our CDC. This is a conservative estimate, mm-hmm. but it's recommended 7 days for rectal sex, 20 days for vaginal sex for cisgender women, for women that are born and assigned female at birth.
Okay.
Now, that's the conservative estimate. There's within that, it may actually be very well protective before those numbers. But those are the numbers at which the scientists have seen without a doubt, 7 days for rectal sex, 20 days for vaginal sex.
Now, one thing I've heard a couple of people say, and this is going in the far opposite extreme, oh, I think I'm going to go out tonight. I'll take a pill.
Well, now that actually, David, thank you, because that is my biggest concern about PrEP right now. That is my biggest concern about wider implementation of PrEP is that people would believe that. And that's actually kind of dangerous for a couple of reasons. One is that it doesn't really prove to be true. Mm-hmm. I mean, that people would get some protection after one dose, that hasn't really been seen in any of the research trials. There is some data to suggest that people do have a good amount of protection after two doses within a 24-hour period. Hmm. That was seen in the IPRGAY study that came out of France. Okay?
Okay.
But one dose in one night has not been seen to offer any protection.
It's almost analogous to the birth control example, because if you took one birth control pill, like, say, you know, a couple hours before you went out, that's pretty useless too.
Yeah.
I mean,
it wouldn't be able to build up.
It's not going to have the result you're seeking.
That's why I got pregnant.
That must be it, David.
Now,
it's not a Tic Tac, okay?
There were some side effects in about 0.5% of the population that started doing PrEP. Do you think, and this would be for men, taking the 7-day regimen and then going on maybe 4 or 5 times a week and then bring it down to every other day, do you think there would be less stress on the kidneys for some people?
Well, that is certainly a question that's being asked in research trials as we speak. For me, as someone who's not a doctor, I really could not recommend that anyone use PrEP in a way that's not consistent with our CDC guidelines, which is daily.
But they're looking into it.
But they are looking into it.
Okay.
They are looking into what that would look like if what we call intermittent dosing would be effective, meaning 4 times a week. Would on-demand dosing, as was studied in France in the IPRGAY study, is that effective as well? All of those questions are currently being asked in research trials, but we just don't know. And for me, I just go back to the 90s. I go back to San Francisco. I go back to the trauma, the devastation of losing people I lost to AIDS. I'm not gambling here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not playing games.
I don't mean to gamble. I'm talking about some people are not going to get as they're going to have some kidney function
mm-hmm.
problems.
Yeah.
Will there be less kidney function problems with a lower dose?
That is
taking
tough.
It half. And do you think more people will be willing to take it? I am terrible at taking pills. I really am terrible at taking pills. I mean, I started a blood pressure medication about a year ago. It's one tiny little pill. It's like 1/8 of an inch big. It's working beautifully. This month I ended up with 5 extras. I know I took it every single day.
You just need to mainline your stuff.
I am terrible. It is right next to the coffee maker. I make coffee every day, and I take the pill. I mean, my doctor, when I was asking him some questions about taking it, he said, "You've never taken a pill before, have you?" I said, "No." I mean, aspirin occasionally.
Does Brian have to hold you down like a cat and try your mouth open?
I don't know why. I'm just saying, do you think more people will get interested in PrEP once some more research comes out that shows you don't have to take it every day, that maybe every other day is good?
Well, I think more people are getting interested as they learn about it. Mm-hmm. And again, we said earlier in 2015, it doubled in the United States. And that was with the guidelines to take it daily.
Yeah.
But David, you know, we're going to have to talk because there are a lot of tools and a lot of ways that you could increase your adherence to your meds. There's a lot. There's apps that help people that appear on their phone.
Patty,
kind of old school.
Patty,
I like the pill boxes.
Me using an app.
Okay, so I'm not going to happen like you.
Yeah.
I like the boxes that you fill at the beginning of the week. You know, you put your drugs inside.
I do those too.
Yeah, Brian does that.
Okay, and then, you know, David, do you forget to brush your teeth?
It sits next to the coffee, and I know I've taken one every single time I've had coffee and I have coffee in the morning every day.
But if you're using a weekly pill box or a monthly pill box, that would also help you to really monitor what you're taking and when you're taking.
See, Erin calls me you're becoming my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, I need these. I need these boxes to help me.
We need to take a break. We're talking to Damon Jacobs. He is a licensed marriage and family therapist working in New York. He has two books. We're going to talk about those in a minute. We're talking about PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis to help prevent HIV. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
This is Jake Winters from Leicester, England, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Lauren Landis is taking off for Easter. You know, we have to ride him about that from now on.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
So, Mr. Religious there in the third seat. Mm-mm.
But, you know, we did have a Dallas family that is at the White House Easter egg roll.
Who?
McFerrin Hogan's.
Oh. Huh.
And their two little boys.
Oh, how nice.
Went to the White House egg roll.
How nice. Damon, we're talking a little bit about PrEP, and I want to wrap this up and get into one of your books. One of the things you talked about when I heard you speak last week was how having PrEP has released so much stress from your life, and because of that lack of stress now, you're healthier.
I definitely would say so. You know, I came of age, I started realizing I was attracted to men in 1985, which was the same exact time that Rock Hudson was being exploited by the media again. And in my mind, it just became embedded, like, okay, if you have sex, if you enjoy sex, that's going to happen to you. And that really stuck with me unconsciously for 25 years until I started using PrEP, until that removed the fear that I would become HIV positive. Now, you got to remember, because you said at the beginning of the show, as someone who is bottom, my HIV status has always been contingent on somebody else's judgment.
Right.
It's always been contingent on the top using a condom and making sure it didn't fall off or fall in. So I've always had to have somebody else take care of me to stay HIV negative. With PrEP, I'm in control of that. I'm in control of my body. With that comes this release of so much fear about the unknown and so much anticipation that I would at some point become HIV positive. And I didn't even realize it until I started using PrEP, how deeply that fear had been holding me back in terms of seeking other goals, in terms of feeling good about life, about sexuality, about my own future.
Mm-hmm.
It's given me a lot more energy and focus than I had before.
There are some legitimate fears out there for sure, and I think a new one just arrived last week in North Carolina. We all watched as a governor signed a bill that was a hurry-up puddle bill passed in both chambers of the legislature in North Carolina in response to the city of Charlotte's
non-discrimination
ordinance.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah.
That's
now,
enormous stress.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, things like that. Yeah, and this gets into your therapist side.
Yeah.
How does that add to people's stress?
Well, certainly structural discrimination and hatred is stressful for all of us, directly and indirectly. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen that, and there's definitely a lot of social psychology research that backs that up. Inherent legal structures that are inherently homophobic, misogynistic, racist, that hurts all of us one way or another. But what I talk about in my books are ways that we as individuals and as communities and families can often come together and be a part of a change within ourselves that often helps to change the world. This is very much based on the teachings of Viktor Frankl, who wrote my favorite book in the world called Man's Search for Meaning, mm-hmm. about how he said the very last of choices that we ever get in this world is the ability to choose our attitude or reaction in any set of circumstances. And that was based on his experience in Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. So it's this idea that even in the worst and most, even when you have the entire outside world or the legal system saying, your life isn't valuable, your life isn't worthy, you don't deserve to have the same rights as everybody else, we still can, within ourselves, maintain a stance of, yes, I am worthy, yes, I am valuable, yes, I am beautiful, and I'm going to continue to maintain that, because you can do whatever you want to my body, but you cannot change my mind and you cannot change my spirit unless I give you permission to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and HIV was one of those things that, you know, some things you can control to get rid of stress. You know, I can get rid of Patty. Stress gone. I can't get rid of HIV. Do you know what I'm saying? It's one of those things that until this pill came along, you couldn't get rid of it. It was around you in your life.
Well, I was always living in anticipation that if I have sex at any given point that I could become HIV no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Condom or without a condom. But also, what I didn't know before PrEP and what's really known more now but isn't known in the greater population is that if an individual is HIV positive and he or she is using their meds consistently and has what's called an undetectable viral load, meaning that doctors can't see the presence of a viral load in their HIV positive system, at that moment, that person has nearly zero chance of transmitting HIV to another person. Mm-hmm. That when and the drugs that are available now for HIV are so powerful that if an HIV positive person is in treatment and taking their meds, for the most part, they are usually undetectable and usually unlikely to transmit HIV. So that is another piece of this that I think is important to talk about, because that has removed a lot of fear and stress as well. And that has removed a barrier between HIV-positive individuals and HIV-negative individuals being able to share in relationships and intimacy and pleasure and sexuality and connection. Mm-hmm. That we haven't had that opportunity in the 35 years of this epidemic, right, until very, very recently.
Mm-hmm. And right now they're even looking into different drugs also.
It is. So PrEP, right now, we just say Truvada and PrEP, kind of like it's mm-hmm. the same thing. In the future, there will be many, many options. Just like now we say birth control, and we could be referring to a pill or a diaphragm or an IUD or an injectable. In the future, we are going to have many, many other options for PrEP as well. There will be gels. There will be injectables. There will be other drugs that people can take.
Injectables is one of the things that was talked about last week at our conference, that you won't have to take a pill. Talk about that a little bit.
So currently in research trials, this is going on, and it's happening here in New York City. There is a research trial that's beginning to look at the safety and efficacy of an injectable, what we call injectable PrEP. Mm-hmm. And the idea of this is that somebody would go into their doctor's office, I believe, every 3 months, and get an injectable medication that would just work in their system without them having to remember, like you, David. You wouldn't have to remember to take a pill every
right.
day. You could just go to your doctor 4 times a year and get an injectable, and you'd be good to go.
But I hate needles.
Well, then you're
going to
have
to
find a way to do something. Of course, then, if you hate needles and you can't take a pill every day, hopefully we will eventually have what's called a microbicide gel, which is kind of like a lube that you would use for rectal sex that would stop HIV transmission as well. And that is currently being looked at in research trials.
They've looked at those for 30 years now. That was one of the first things they looked at, and it never worked. But there's something now that seems to be working?
There's something they're studying in trials.
Huh.
There's
That's
enough to think that it's medically hopeful that we'll have that at some point.
Okay, so stress can cause other diseases and illnesses.
Well, stress puts a strain. It puts a strain on our bodies physically. It messes with our sleep. It messes with our digestive system, our muscular skeletal system. It often leads us to be irritable and grumpy, so our friends and family and lovers don't want to deal with us. It often causes trouble in the workplace. And if you're tired and distracted, it can really affect your driving if you're driving a car. And, of course, that can lead to some really bad, nasty, mortal consequences. Mm-hmm. So stress all around is really a killer. And Americans, I don't think, talk about that enough, how the impact and the consequences of stress really have a cumulative effect on us over time. Hard relationships, heart attacks, strokes, etc.
Yeah.
When we learn ways to cope with stress, and for me, a big part of that was eliminating the word should, like 25 years ago, when I realized that so much, that most of the suffering of my anxiety and stress and depression as a child was related to thinking I should be something or someone I'm not. And when I began to challenge those messages and change them, it made a world of difference in terms of how I could be myself and become a therapist and become an HIV educator.
I think from a political perspective, we have the grand old should party because I cannot even imagine now the horrific stress of being trans, but particularly a trans woman and particularly a trans woman of color living in the state of North Carolina right now.
Right. I'm with you.
That's just gobsmackingly terrifying that the state would codify hate.
Well, that's a perfect example of how that kind of stress causes illnesses. We've heard from trans people who've been on our show who said, well, they just don't use public restrooms, so they hold it in. And that's not healthy.
It's not healthy.
That is not healthy. That's really not good for your kidneys.
Yeah. And it's interesting hearing this because people usually say to me, doesn't anything ever bother you? And I go, no. You know, like at the paper, if I'm assigned something and it doesn't sound interesting to me, I just look at everybody and say, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, I don't have stress. I really don't. And I can't imagine living with that kind of stress. And I see people at work in stressful jobs. I had a job before I came back to the paper that I hated, but I wasn't stressed about it. It was like, I'll go do my job. Every time I tried to quit, they gave me more money and, you know, finally, they laid us all off. So, you know, it just didn't bother me.
But there are a lot of people who live in a, like you say, structural racism and every manner of discrimination and bias against you, who live it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and every 4 years, 366 days. I mean, it's you know, we hear talking about, you know, black parents having to have the talk with their kids. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's just an enormous amount of stress that hate produces.
It's institutionalized stigma, no doubt. And when it goes on the record, it's institutionalized, and that can have an effect on our individual stress.
Yeah.
What I always like to recommend, and again, this is borrowing from Buddhism, is the separation between pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
If you call me a name or you say something horrible to me, that might hurt my feelings and I might feel pain from that. And that's just part of being human. But once you leave the room and you go away and go back to your life, how much I'm going to suffer is up to me. That's my decision.
Mm-hmm.
And suffering is going to be contingent on what I do in my own mind. Oh, you should be different. You should be a different gender. You should be a different sexuality. You should not talk the way you do. If I'm doing that in my own mind, that's me causing the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to last long after that person has said something nasty and gone away.
Right. It's going to pulse for a long time after all that stimulus is left.
Right. Yeah.
Josh had one last prep question. In Texas, you know, we teach abstinence in schools because that works. And we know that kids under the age of 18 don't have sex ever. So I don't know where that teenage birth rate being the highest in the country right here comes from, because we teach them not to have sex, right?
Okay, it's Easter, so maybe that's how.
Yeah, is there an age limit for PrEP?
Well, the FDA approved Truvada as PrEP for adults 18 and over. However, doctors do have the ability to prescribe this drug on an off-label basis. So they can do that. It is within their ethical guidelines to prescribe Truvada for a minor as an off-label medication.
Mm-hmm. Just teaching them to have sex? I'm just using the lines that get thrown at us.
That's what they said about condoms 30 years ago,
That's
too.
Right. It's the same thing. I want to get to your other book, Rational Relating. What is that book about?
So Rational Relating, The Smart Way to Stay Sane in the Crazy World of Love, was based at the time I wrote it on about 15 years of working with individuals and couples and really offering opportunities and tools and exercises for people to merge their brains and their hearts. And the cover of the book is sort of this goopy brain heart. People can look at it online. But the idea is that when we are able to have symmetry between our heart and our brain, then relationships can become conduits for joy, for pleasure, for serenity, for satisfaction. And unfortunately, most of us don't ever learn how to do that. We learn how to do pretty much every job in this society, but we never really learn how to be in a primary relationship or any kind of relationship for any length of time. And this book is intended to help people with those tools.
Good. Anybody have any other – because we're not going to talk about PrEP with a whole lot of people that I've found here locally or anywhere. Everybody prescribes it. Yeah, we give it. You know, even AHF, which is the organization that rails against it, you're keeping drugs away from people who really need it. Oh, you're just encouraging sex without condoms. Oh, you're doing all this. And they prescribe it too.
Sure.
But when you have that kind of dual message, it's not clear. You are the first person who talked about PrEP plainly, simply, and just said, it's a way to protect your life.
Well, David, I like to say that although we said PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis, for me and for the thousands and thousands of people on the Facebook group I run, it has come to stand for proactive, responsible, and empowered pleasure. Proactive, responsible, empowered pleasure. And that is something every man and woman of any HIV status, anyone transgender, anyone who is sexually active or not, can just ask themselves. What does it mean to be proactive in my life? What does it mean to be responsible? And what does it mean to be empowered and feel good about my decisions related to pleasure and protection? That is the opportunity that's before us with PrEP. And we can ask these questions in scientific ways now that we've never had the opportunity to do, at least not in the last 35 years.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Well, I have to disagree with David because I think you've been completely rational. This entire hour. So thank you very much for that. Proving David wrong once again.
And here's where my stress level just stays even. I just say, Patty.
Happy Easter, David.
Thank you. Damon, I want to thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much. And sure. I hope people keep in touch. Come to DamonLJacobs.com if you'd like more information or join the Facebook group at PrepFacts, Rethinking HIV Prevention and Sex. If you look me up, don't forget the L, Damon
it's
L. Jacobs.
Damon L. Jacobs.
And I hope you'll come back again. We'll do this
I'd love
again
to. Sometime.
Good.
I'd love to.
Thank you very much. And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. Our guests next week are from Jonathan's Place, a shelter for abused and neglected children.